scripture this morning comes from the book of 2 Kings, chapter 2, beginning with verse 9. Elijah and Elisha are at the Jordan River. And when they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." Elijah responded, "You have asked a hard thing, but if you see me as I am being taken from you, it will be granted your wish. If you don't see, it won't." Now, as they continued walking and talking, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them, and Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha kept watching and crying out, "Father, Father, the chariots of fire, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." And when Elisha could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. And then he picked up the mantle of Elijah that had fallen. And he went back and he stood on the banks of the Jordan. He took the mantle of Elijah that had fallen and he struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" But when he had struck the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha crossed over. And when the company of the prophets who were at Jericho saw Elisha at a distance, they declared, "The spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha." God always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. We are picking up today the book of 2 Kings. I realize probably the last thing I needed to do as an introduction to this sermon is to tell you that 2 Kings covers 300 years of ancient history. I figured that was probably not a good attention grabber to say that we're going to deal with ancient history, three centuries of it today. But that's what it does, 300 years of ancient history. As the book of 2 Kings begins, the ancient kingdom of Israel has already been involved in a quarrel, and they've already had a split, and they've already divided themselves into two kingdoms. That happened back in 1 Kings. And so as we move through the book of 2 Kings now, we'll go back and forth. We'll get some things, some information about the northern kingdom, and we'll get some information about the southern kingdom, and we're going to see the kings do one foolish thing after another. And we're going to read through the book of 2 Kings, and we're not going to encounter a single likable character in all 25 chapters of it. One king after another. Even the main hero of 2 Kings, Elisha, is a grouchy old rascal filled with so much anger and self-righteousness that he has no sign whatsoever of love or kindness or patience. And he's the best that the book of 2 Kings has to offer in the way of personalities. The book of 2 Kings covers the 11 kings from the northern kingdom before it finally fell due to the invasion of the Assyrian Empire. And it will cover 16 kings in the southern kingdom and one queen who ruled for a few years. And of all of those kings, only one of them was truly good, and that was Josiah. So as we read through 2 Kings, 300 years of ancient history, we are reading chapter after chapter about a people and kingdoms that are in decline. And you might say, well, why would I want to spend my time reading 300 years of decline and deterioration and things going down? Well, sometimes if we can keep our inner balance and stay curious instead of depressed when we read stories like this, it does help us to understand, even if it's nothing more than what not to do, it does help us to understand what it means to be in decline. I mean, to start with, any of us that are over 30, which is almost everybody in the room, I mean, we are in decline. It doesn't hurt to be curious about what happens when decline sets in. And how do we not handle that? And how do we handle it? We can look across the American scene today at mainline churches, and we can see that every single mainline denomination is in decline. We see other institutions in decline. The decline of our political parties, the decline of democracy, the decline of capitalism, the decline of social, everything, there's decline all around us. And so it doesn't hurt to pick up the holy book and approach it with some curiosity and say, what went right, what went wrong in terms of all of this decline that's happening? So the book of 2 Kings helps us to face reality, and it helps us to search the pages and see if there are some things that people of faith can hold on to whenever we face inevitable declines that occur in our own institutions and in our own lives. Reading through the book of 2 Kings, there are three primary characters. I've already mentioned Elisha to you. Second major character, Elisha's a prophet. Second major character found in the book of 2 Kings is Hezekiah. He was a king in the southern kingdom. And the third major character is another king in the southern kingdom by the name of Josiah. So if anybody ever gives you a test on 2 Kings, keep in mind those are the three characters: Elisha, Hezekiah, Josiah. Now, when we think about, let's pick each one of these up and take a look at each of these characters. They're all very fascinating, very interesting. Elisha is the protege of Elijah. 1 Kings tells the story of Elijah. 2 Kings tells the story of Elisha. I hope you've got that straight, because in case I mangle the names in the course of this sermon, at least you've got the baseline here for it. So when Elijah is getting ready to depart this world, he's the older prophet. As he's getting ready to depart, he looks at his protege and he says, "Now, before I leave, you can ask me for one thing and I'll give it to you." And so Elisha says, "I think I would like to have a double portion of your spirit." And so Elijah says, "Well, it's going to be a hard thing to do, but if you watch while I disappear, if you keep your eye and you see that I'm not here anymore, then that gift will be granted to you." Now, let's stop and think for a moment about Elijah. We talked about him last week. Elijah was a tough old guy, and he faced down kings and queens. He stayed faithful to God, even though it involved great sacrifice and great cost to him. He was really tough, Elijah was. He was one of these characters that you don't want to mess with, Elijah. So here's Elisha, and he says, "I want twice what you've got." So what happens if you double Elijah's righteousness and strength and put it in somebody else? Well, what happens is you come up with the most obnoxious prophet in the entire Old Testament. When you double Elijah's spirit and you put it in Elisha, the guy's impossible. And now, he does have enormous powers because of this double spirit. Elisha is able to do things that no other prophet in the Old Testament is able to do. He's able to raise the dead. He's able to multiply food and feed hundreds of people at a time. He's able to heal people. He's able to make iron axes float on the water. He's able to do all these extraordinary things that we've never seen the likes of this before, but he is so mean. He's a bully, and he uses violence to enforce the rules of the Lord. I mean, we're talking about religion run amok here with Elisha. To give you an example of what happens when you double the spirit of Elijah, Elisha is, after he's received this gift of double, he's walking to the town of Bethel, and while he's walking along, there are some small boys, who start to follow him around. Now, if you've been in a third world country, it's not unusual for children to be following you, and so there are these children that are following him, and Elisha evidently was going bald. And so these kids decided that they were going to razz him about that. And so they're calling him Old Baldy as he's walking along. And remember, he's got a double spirit of Elijah in him. So he calls to the woods that are nearby, and two bears come out and maul these kids and tear them apart and kill them. 42 boys are killed because they called Elisha Old Baldy. So a double spirit of Elijah, not a good thing to ask for here with this prophet. He's the top guy in 2 Kings. Now, Elisha is not there for us as a role model. Elisha's there for us, I think, as a warning as to what happens when we have religion, an overdose of religion, without what Paul refers to as the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Love and joy and patience and kindness. Elisha's there for us to see what happens when religion deteriorates and it's missing its essential elements. The second major character in the book of 2 Kings is Hezekiah. Now, Hezekiah was a king in the southern kingdom. And when he was a boy, he was a prince. And he knew he was going to be king. And in his childhood, he saw the northern kingdom get invaded and fall. So Hezekiah knew what would happen if you messed with these foreign powers. He knew what would happen if you disobeyed the laws of God. And so when Hezekiah became king in the southern kingdom, he decided he was not going to make the same mistakes as the people in the northern kingdom made. And so the Bible says he was a pretty good king. He didn't, clean it all up, but he was, on the whole, a pretty good king. And one of the things we also know about Hezekiah is that he had lots of conversations with Isaiah, a prophet who's going to have his own book later on in the Old Testament. So Hezekiah and Isaiah were contemporaries, and Isaiah frequently would show up and give Hezekiah advice. Now, Hezekiah, like I say, he, for the most part, he did pretty good. But he had also been assured that even though there had been a lot of problems, and eventually the warning was there that the southern kingdom was eventually going to fall too, Hezekiah had been told that it wouldn't happen in his lifetime. That in his lifetime, he would live out his natural life and continue to rule as king. What was happening in Hezekiah's time is that the Assyrian Empire was fading in the east, and the Babylonian Empire was on the ascension. So you don't have to remember all of those terms unless you want to. But the Babylonians were not yet as strong as they would be. In fact, by the time they got to full strength, they were going to destroy the temple in Jerusalem. The Babylonians did that. But at this point in Hezekiah's kingship, they weren't that powerful yet. So Hezekiah, he knew that they were on the uprise, and he wanted to impress them. Hezekiah had a thing that he liked to show off. So he invites these emissaries from the ascending Babylonian Empire to come to Jerusalem, and he takes them all the way through the temple, and he shows them all the treasures that have been put in the temple, shows them the gold, he takes them to his palace, he shows them all of the things, all of the wealth, and all of the riches that he has. And later on, when these emissaries go back to Babylon, the prophet Isaiah says to Hezekiah, "You shouldn't have done that. That was a really foolish thing for you to do. to take these people through the temple of the Lord and to take these people through your palace and to show them all the stuff you have. It's not going to be long before they're going to be back here with their armies, and they're going to take what you've shown them. And Hezekiah's response, in essence, was, I don't care. I'm all right. That's the problem of the next generation. That's not my problem. And so here we have Hezekiah, who was a pretty good king in many respects, but his response is, I don't care what happens to the next generation. I just want to do what makes me look good. I just want to do what gives me pleasure. I just want to live the kind of life I want to live. I want to have the popularity that I want to have, and don't care about the next generation. Hezekiah. Third major character in 2 Kings is Josiah. Josiah was 8 years old when he became the king. And obviously he had some adults who helped give him some guidance, and he seems to have grown up in such a way that he loved God and he believed that the people needed to follow God's laws or it would be ruin for them. And so Josiah became the king. And when Josiah was the king, he decided that the temple of the Lord was an embarrassment, that it had gone into disrepair, and it was the temple of the Lord. So he started funneling some money to get the temple repaired. And while he was, like any old building, you're always doing, and those of you that are on the trustees, you know that, you know the problem of an old building and trying to keep it going. And the temple was a pretty old building. By the time of Josiah, it was already close to 300-400 years old. So as the people are repairing the temple, they come across this book that has been hidden inside the temple. And many people, myself included, think that that was the book of Deuteronomy, literally meaning the second law. So they find the book of Deuteronomy, and it's laws from Moses. And they read the book, and they say, we got to show this book to the king. And so the king reads it, and he tears his clothes because they tore the, anytime something bad happened in this period of history, people would tear their clothes. You know, a death, bad news, whatever. There's a lot of torn clothes, just suffice it to say, in 2 Kings. So Josiah tears his clothes and he says, you know, we haven't been following this. We've been totally disregarding the teachings of this book. We've not been loving God like we're supposed to love God. We're not taking care of our neighbors like we're supposed to do that. And we're not observing the Passover anymore. We're not doing any of the things that are in this book. And so he makes the command that there's going to be an assembly, and he orders that the book be read to everybody, from the top officials of the kingdom to even the lowliest, most powerless people in the population. The book is read to everybody, and then everybody tears their clothes, and they all say, you know, no wonder our country's been having so many problems. We've been disregarding all of these things from God. Now, so the major characters are Elisha, Hezekiah, Josiah. The two major events that take place in the book of 2 Kings are the destruction of the northern kingdom and the destruction of the southern kingdom. Those are the two major historical events. These kingdoms that began, and at their high point had David as king, by the book of 2 Kings now, 2 Kings will tell us the story of how both the northern and the southern kingdom end. The northern kingdom is going to end in the year 722 BC, over 700 years before Jesus. It's going to end because they're going to be invaded by the Assyrian army. The Assyrian army was located in what today would be Iraq. The northern kingdom, when it falls to one of the most vicious invading forces in all of world history. Because when the Assyrians defeated you, they basically got rid of you. They didn't just beat you and make you their subjects. They made you disappear. So they made everybody in the northern kingdom disappear. Nobody has a clue as to where the people, the 10 tribes of Israel ended up. Nobody knows. Not a clue as to where they went. We suppose that the Assyrians had a very successful genocide. And what few people were left were transported off to some other part of the Assyrian kingdom. Now, it was the way of the Assyrians that when they defeated a people, they also brought somebody else in to put in that land. And so people came from other parts of the Assyrian Empire and began to live in what was the northern kingdom. The capital of the northern kingdom was Samaria. So when the Assyrians started bringing people in to fill up this land that they had defeated, they were the people they brought in, because the city was Samaria, the people that they brought in became known as Samaritans. So the beginning of the Samaritans in the Bible is in 2 Kings, these defeated people coming and living in that area. Now, we're going to hear a lot more about the Samaritans in the New Testament, in the life of Jesus and in the stories of Jesus, but that's the start of it. So the Samaritans were people who, when they got there, from wherever they came from, they sort of worshiped the god of the southern kingdom, Judah, which became known as the Jews. Judah became known as the Jews. They sort of worshiped the god that Judah had continued to talk about, but they also mixed a lot of other things in, such as ideas from the gods where they had been. And the Samaritans and the Jews really did not get along with each other. And we'll see that when we get to the New Testament with Jesus. But that occurs in the book of 2 Kings. The other main historical event in 2 Kings is the southern kingdom also falls. And in this time it will be Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. The kingdom, remember, Hezekiah decided to give them a peek at all of the wealth and all of the treasures. And sure enough, the Babylonian armies come back, and Nebuchadnezzar is king, and they destroy the walls of Jerusalem, they destroy the temple, nothing is left, they haul off all the treasures to the east. It won't be until the book of Matthew when travelers from the east bring treasures back to give to the Christ child. But in the book of 2 Kings, they all disappear, and they all head east. So those are the two historical events in 2 Kings. By the time we get to 2 Kings, both kingdoms have been obliterated. So what's the bad news? What's the good news? What are the practical applications that we have from 2 Kings? Well, the bad news is that the people completely lose both elements that are essential for people to be a religious people. The Bible said there are two elements that we need to have in order to be religious, in order to be faithful to God. One is we have to love God with all of our heart, soul, strength, and mind. And the other element is that we have to love our neighbors as ourselves. If we don't have these two elements, we're not going to have the abundant life that Jesus promises us. We have to love God with all of our heart, soul, strength, and mind. We have to love our neighbor as ourselves. And in the book of 2 Kings, the people lose both of those. If you don't put God first, then we'll put something else in as a substitute God, or we'll put ourselves in as God. And so if we don't put God first, if we don't have a sense of who God is, and we don't put God first in our lives, we will put some other God in place. And the book of 2 Kings repeatedly warns us that whatever God we put in place of the living God is not going to love us. It may please us, it may excite us, but there's only one living God who can see us, who can know us, who can hear us. The idols, whatever we put in place won't see us, won't hear us, won't understand us, won't really care about us in the sense of the living God. And if we put ourselves in place, if we think we're God, well, Lord have mercy on everybody else that has to deal with us. And so they lose this element. That's part of the bad news of 2 Kings. They lose this element of putting God first, like some of the commandments say, have no other gods before me. Don't make any graven idols. Don't take my name in vain. Three of the Ten Commandments are devoted to that first element of religion that's necessary for us to have abundant life that Jesus gives. The other thing that's necessary for us to have abundant life is that we love our neighbor as ourselves. And we don't see that going on either in the book of 2 Kings. So they've lost both of these things in 2 Kings. And the bad news is what happens to people when they no longer love God and when they no longer love their neighbors. Now, the good news of 2 Kings, I think, is found in the person of Josiah. His heart was in the right place. As for his competency as a king, he doesn't seem to have the same competency as what King David had, for example, or even some of the evil kings that are mentioned. But Josiah is a good person. Josiah is the one who wants to repair the temple. He's the one, they bring the book to him that's been uncovered. And Josiah is the one that wants it read to all of the people. And Josiah is the one who tries with all of his heart to do the right thing. Sometimes that is a difficult thing to do when we feel pessimistic about the big picture. Sometimes we say, well, what does it matter? What does it matter that I'm faithful? What does it matter that I still try to do the right thing? What does it matter that I still stay loyal to God? I mean, everything seems to be falling apart. What does it matter that I'm still trying to be responsible when it seems like nobody else is trying to be responsible? Josiah could have said that. He could have gotten caught up in the pessimism and that can lead to apathy when things around all seem to be going in the wrong direction. But he wasn't that way. The Lord put a spirit in Josiah. And I see that as good news as we're reading through 2 Kings, that the Lord gives us a spirit to where we can still see things that are important and still see things that matter, even when maybe the picture around us looks more bleak and pessimistic. Practical applications. Just quickly, three practical applications that come from 2 Kings. While I don't advocate that we act like Elisha, there's a part of that Elijah story that has some practical application for us. And that is when Elijah goes into heaven, the chariots come. We're going to sing about Elijah in a little bit. Swing low, sweet chariot. That's where that spiritual comes from. Elijah, the chariots come, take him up. And his mantle falls to the ground, and Elisha goes and he picks up the mantle, which is a way of saying he picks up the work that the generation before him has left. And every generation has to pick up the mantle. And the thing is, as we move through life, we have to pick up the mantle several times. As we age, we have several mantles in this life to pick up. We did confirmation for the youth group a couple weeks ago, and when they joined the church, part of what I try to impress upon them is that there's a mantle now that they need to pick up, and a responsibility now that they have in front of them, particularly to bring some of their enthusiasm and some of their idealism and some of their freshness into the community. There's a mantle that the young have to pick up. And if a church has a point where none of the young people are picking up their mantle, then we can see that a church really struggles with that. But it's not just the young that have a mantle to pick up. People that are in their 30s and 40s and 50s also have a mantle to pick up. in a congregation or in a group of people. And that mantle is the mantle of these are the people that do a lot of the heavy lifting in a church. And this is an age where wisdom and strength together are as good as they're going to get. And so if people in their 30s and 40s and 50s don't pick up the mantle that has been left for that generation, then we see the whole community suffer. Whether it's a church, whether it's a town, whether it's a nation. People in those ages have to pick up the mantle. But you don't get to stop once you hit 60. Because there's another mantle that is there for 60 and 70, 80, even 90-year-olds at times. And in every generation, in every society except our own, there's this understanding that at a certain age, you become an elder of the community. And an elder doesn't mean that you get to retire and go to Florida and play golf all the time. To be an elder in a community, in every society except our own, to be an elder in the community is to have your own special gift that you bring to the community. A special responsibility, a special memory, a capacity to be able to share the stories. And to be 60 or 70 or 80 or even 90 if you're in good health also is a time to pick up the mantle that's been dropped by the generation now that has passed on. And so a practical application of 2 Kings appears in that very second chapter as we're reading it, where Elisha sees that the mantle has fallen. And it's now his responsibility to pick up the mantle for who he is at that point in his life. And at any point in our lives, we can see that there's a mantle for us to pick up. Second practical application, Hezekiah. Oh, Hezekiah, who says, not my problem. Whatever happens to the future, whatever happens to my children, whatever happens to my grandchildren, whatever happens to my great-grandchildren, not my problem. And we can see in the book of 2 Kings that it is a practical disaster when we don't think ahead and think beyond just ourselves. And we face that when it comes to decisions that a church or an institution may make. We face that when it comes to decisions that a country may need to make. There are lots of decisions being made by churches and by institutions and by politicians where it's very clear that these are decisions that had that underlying theme, not my problem. Let the kids pay off the debt. Let the kids deal with whatever mess that we've left. And we see that practical point being made in 2 Kings with Hezekiah. And then the third practical point is Josiah. And I've already pretty much mentioned with Josiah, he could see that things were in decline, but he didn't let himself be overcome with pessimism. He didn't let himself be overcome with apathy. In spite of what was happening in what he could see, he trusted that there was an even bigger picture of a God of the universe whose plans would not be thwarted no matter how bad things may get at the moment. And the practical way that Josiah lived his life, even though he could have been depressed and said, what's the point? Even though he could have said, it's not going to matter what I do. He didn't do that. He didn't go down that road. And as a consequence, many, many people were blessed. And God's will was done at that point. And that's the best any of us can do, whether we're just ordinary people or whether we happen to be the king of a country. To be faithful as God gives us the opportunities. And we see that with Josiah.